Pump up the volume on your parenting with Parent Pump Radio. Tune into something different that makes a difference. At Parent Pump Radio, instead of a ripple, we choose to create a splash. Get energized, get inspired, and get informed with how to parent in the new millennium. With your host and parent coach super guide, Jacqueline T.D. Nguyen.
Hi, this is Jacqueline T.D. Nguyen, and we're here to pump up your parenting skills, pump up your knowledge, and pump up your energy. Our show today is sponsored by The Coop. The Coop is located in the South Bay area of Los Angeles. It's the newest and coolest play and party space for kids and adults. Kids will play for hours in their enormous ball pit, two-story curly slide, super cool rope climbing tunnel. So book your next party at The Coop today. Their phone number is 310-374-2667, or you can visit them on the web at The Coop, and that's two O's, southbay.com. And if you're a single mom and live in the Los Angeles area, join our meetup group to get support, friendship, and knowledge. The name of the group is Best Single Moms, with an S, of South Bay, Los Angeles. And you'll also find the link in our show notes. And as always, please go to parentpumpradio.com to tell us what you're struggling with, your potential project, potential topics that you like to hear about, your comments, suggestions, and feedback. So on to our show today. Statistics shows that at least 30 million people of all ages and genders suffer from an eating disorder in the U.S. and that every 62 minutes, at least one person dies as a direct result from an eating disorder. As humans, we are highly visual and our decisions are greatly impacted by what we see. And with the technology age, we have even more visual access to influence our decisions, our thoughts, and our emotions. And every day we see TV, movie stars, and models with thin bodies on magazine covers, on TV, on the internet. So as a parent, are you asking yourself how all this affects your developing teens? How does it influence how they feel about their body, their image, and who they are? And what can you do to prevent your child from being a statistic? Well, our guest today has been working in the field of nutrition since 2000. She has extensive experience working with eating disorder patients in residential, hospital, and office setting. She's also a consultant to the Torrance Memorial Medical Stabilization Program for patients with eating disorders and a visiting professor at Mount San Antonio College. So ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to introduce you to Michelle Monterino. Hi, Michelle.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm good.
So I'm glad we finally got together. It was really hard to get a time with you. You're so busy.
I'm happy to do this, though. I've been looking forward to it.
Oh, good. Tell me, how did you get started in the field of nutrition and what made you so excited about it?
Oh, I love what food does for the body. It's fascinating, really. I mean, looking at just what we put in our bodies and what it can do for our health and things like that. I was hooked from the very beginning.
Have you always had this desire, this excitement about nutrition, or did something kind of clicked one day?
Yeah, it was funny, actually. When I was in college, I was flipping through the catalog and I saw the nutrition major to be a dietitian. And I was like, huh, I like food. I like nutrition. It's always been something I was interested in. I didn't even realize that there was a major for it. And so I declared actually as a freshman and started taking nutrition classes, and I was hooked right away. And it was actually the perfect field for me and never looked back. So I enjoyed every minute of going through school, and I enjoyed my dietetic internship. And so I have just a strong passion for it. I'm grateful that I found the field, and it's been one that I'm happy to work in and have never thought about changing my profession.
Now, I know you see private patients at the Torrance Hospital, and you focus on eating disorder and weight management. And I know this probably involves bulimia and anorexia nervosa. Now, what made you decide to specialize or focus on something like eating disorder? Because I would think that would be, for me, be traumatizing to work with these kids who are literally committing suicide on their body.
In my internship, I did an eating disorder rotation, and I was attracted to the field of eating disorders because I am able to work with clients and teach them how to get back to understanding their bodies and how to properly incorporate food, and the type of field where I get to do lots of nutrition education and develop relationships with my clients and work with them on overcoming their struggles.
So I can see that could be very rewarding for you then.
It is. It's really good. And I've had clients that I've had for years. And so it enables me to develop these long-term relationships with clients and work on getting them back on track with the food. I really enjoy working within the eating disorder field because we're dealing with the nutrition and then the therapeutic side as well. And recovery from an eating disorder can be a difficult process. And somebody who has an eating disorder, oftentimes it's not necessarily something that they choose to have. It's not something that can just easily go away. It's something that takes time to work through.
So when you're counseling these kids, what type of nutrition counseling are you counseling them on?
So I am counseling them on all kinds of things, a lot of nutrition education on what food does for the body and why it's important to get the nutrients in. With some of my clients that are underweight, we need to work on figuring out how to get the right amount in and how to get the proper nutrients in. And sometimes that's done in a step-by-step way.
Okay. Now, I'm just going to detour a little bit because I'm looking at your bio and I have two questions. A dietitian and nutritionist, I know you're both. So what is the difference and is there any similarities?
So a nutritionist is really anybody. Anybody can call themselves a nutritionist. I think a nutritionist is an easy name that people understand, but really you don't have to have any background or degree to be a nutritionist. Anybody that deems themselves a nutrition expert can call themselves one. A registered dietitian is somebody that's gone through school. So I have a bachelor's degree and a master's degree in nutrition, plus did a dietetic internship and have to keep up continuing education units on a regular basis.
So that dietitian, you had to really study more in depth about food and nutrition in order to be registered as that.
Right, and keep up with it on a regular basis. That's the difference. So I usually just advise people, there are a lot of nutrition experts out there that have a lot of knowledge. I just always caution people to check out who they're seeing and do they have the appropriate background.
Okay. And the other thing that strikes me really interesting in your bio is that you are also certified in intuitive eating. Can you tell me more about that?
Intuitive eating, the certification came from the authors of the book Intuitive Eating. So Elise Resch and Evelyn Triboli, and they wrote a book on getting back to the basics of just really listening to your body. The title of the book is Intuitive Eating, a Revolutionary Diet Program That Works. And so it's really the idea of throwing away these fad diets and really just getting back to the basics of listening to hunger and fullness, listening to the body's cues in regards to what it wants. And it's amazing. We have these bodies that will guide us to do the things we want it to do if we just listen. I think that society has trained us not to listen anymore. And intuitive eating is one of my favorite things in all of my nutrition counseling because I love that we have these bodies that can guide us to do what it needs to do. And we just need to follow it.
So can you give us an example of what intuitive eating is? Like, what am I doing or can I do? And that's called intuitive eating.
Well, the best example of an intuitive eater is a baby that breastfeeds. Because a baby that breastfeeds, we actually don't ever see how much they eat, but they are eating and they're growing and they're doing what they need to do. And they want to eat when they're hungry. And you notice that they'll stop when they're full, or even kids. At their youngest, they eat when they're hungry and stop when they're full. So those are the best examples of intuitive eaters. I think what happens is that for all of us, that gets lost.
Yeah, and we're just eating to eat. And I think a lot of times, like you're eating in the car, you're eating from the TV, and before you know it, you ate that whole bag of Cheetos or that whole pint of ice, half a gallon ice cream.
Exactly. And one of the best ways to preserve the intuitive eating, I usually advise parents, is to let your child do what they're going to do. So in other words, as parents, it is our job to provide the food and to provide the meal times. But at those meal times, it's then the kid's job to decide what of it and how much of it they're going to eat. So that kind of helps them to preserve their intuitive eating ability. So if they sit down to dinner and they only take a few bites of things and they're full, then that's maybe legitimately them being full. I think sometimes what happens is, again, with nutrition and all this information, as parents, we kind of want to tell them, no, maybe eat a few more bites, or you can't get up until you eat this or that. But what that could be doing is actually overriding their actual intuitive eating sense.
Yeah, because I know there's a lot of families that grew up where you got to clean your plate before you can leave the dinner table.
Right. And so they could have been full before finishing that plate. And then once you get used to having to clean your plate, you get used to not being able to recognize that stop signal anymore.
So if the child says, I'm full, you let them be full at that point and allow them to stop eating is what you're saying.
Exactly. And so then parents will ask, but what if they want to eat 5 minutes later? Kind of the best way to control that is, as a parent, you can kind of structure the meal and snack times. And so if they say I'm full and they've only eaten two bites, then not letting them eat 5 minutes later, but kind of saying, okay, you can eat at the next meal or snack time. And when they're hungry, they will eat.
Okay, I see. Then how can we as parents bring back the intuitive eating if we've lost it? Because it sounds like a lot of us have.
I think, again, just letting kids do their thing. So the division of responsibility is that it's the parents' job to provide the food and the meal times, and it's the kids' job to decide what of it and how much of it they're going to eat. So as parents, if we can allow that, that is one way to help preserve the intuitive eating. I think another way is just to teach kids to appreciate food and to, as much as possible, eliminate the distractions. And getting back to the idea of actually sitting down and having a family meal, trying not to have them eat in front of the TV or in the car or in a really rushed state. Because, I mean, let's be honest, who is able to listen to their body at that point?
So this is something parents need to do too. Get rid of the distraction, eat together as a family, and spend time talking. And this actually solves a lot more than just eating disorder. From what statistics says, when you're eating together with meals and getting rid of distraction, what, like you're saying, you're building your intuition, you're building relationship with your children so that when they get to the teenage years, they are used to having conversations with you and trusting you.
Absolutely. And I think some people say, well, you know, we're so busy and it's difficult to do. I mean, it doesn't have to be every night either, but at least trying to make dinner time a couple nights a week, this family dinner time where everybody...
I think statistics says like 3 times a week you have a meal together.
Yes. It's amazing what, you know, you'll see when doing that.
Okay. So what are some of the challenges that you face when you're working in this field?
I think the media is the biggest challenge right now. I think there's so much misinformation. And I think that due to social media, we have so much access to information, especially for kids and adolescents. It's hard for them to realize that just because it's on Facebook doesn't make it true. And so there's a lot of misinformation. And I think a lot of people are reading these things and thinking of them as fact. Because again, anybody can put anything on the internet, so it doesn't have to be true.
Okay. I'm sure there's a lot of issues going on right now, probably even the same as we've always gone through, and other major ones that maybe we're coming across with the internet and the age of technology. What do you see as some of the major nutrition issues that parents are facing today?
I think one of the biggest things is, again, just the diet culture and all the, you know, diet information. And I think the media is over-sensationalizing the food stuff and labeling things as good or bad. And so kids are bringing that information back and not really sure what to eat. It's also instilling a lot of food fear in a lot of people and in teenagers. And that's also disrupting the eating process.
Food fear. I like that, those two words. What does it mean for you when you say food fear? I may have a different definition, but I'd like to hear from you what food fear means.
When I think of food fear, I think of people just fearing all different kinds of stuff because they're hearing all this information out there. We just don't know what to think anymore, right? You know, one minute you're hearing something's good and one minute you're hearing something's bad. So it's creating this fear of, can I eat this? Can I eat that? What do I do? Are eggs good? Are eggs bad? There's just constantly, we're inundated with this conflicting information.
So is there a place we can go to find the right information or someone we can go to find the correct information?
A registered dietitian actually is a really good place to do that. So I think if somebody's feeling really misinformed or confused, it is not a bad idea to make an appointment with a registered dietitian just to do a little bit of background of your nutrition information. In my private practice, that's one of the other things I do is a lot of family nutrition education, is just to bring whole families in and just educate them about the body and what it does and what really is going on.
If you're listening and you have questions, then you should contact Michelle. And her phone number is 310-378-3360. You can also email her at nutrition by Monarino, that's spelled M-A-N like Nancy, A-R-I-N-O at yahoo.com.
I was going to say too, there's eatright.org is a good site that has good information, or even myplate.gov. It's a government site, but I feel like it's really accurate information.
So these website obviously is, like you said, accurate. So we can go there to get really good nutrition advice. What other ways can parents do? What can we do to provide our children with good nutrition advice?
Going back to the idea of just, my favorite thing to tell all of my clients is everything in moderation. So I'm a big advocate of nothing in excess. So I think when confused, just reminding yourself that, going back to, everything is okay in moderation, and modeling that as parents and modeling that to kids and teaching that to kids as well. Sugar is a hot topic right now. And I think everybody's really fearful of sugar. And I think, again, going back to the idea of teaching our kids that, of course, we don't want to have our entire diet be sugar, but we can have sugar once in a while, and it is okay to bring it in moderately, and we have to live. And so we've got to teach them how to kind of to navigate that.
I want to talk about the eating disorder. I know that's what you specialize in, and you work with a lot of teens and families that are dealing with this, and I think it's really important that we touch on it. Can you explain to me what is considered an eating disorder and what is an eating disorder?
There's a couple different types of diagnosable eating disorders: anorexia nervosa, which is typically diagnosed by a low body weight, refusal to eat, refusal to gain weight. Then there's bulimia nervosa, which is eating large quantities of food at a time and getting rid of it. And then there's binge eating disorder, which is just binging and not necessarily using any of the compensating methods like purging, vomiting, or exercise. So those are the three DSM eating disorders.
Okay. My question now is, by the time they're diagnosed with it, I don't want to say it's too late, but like it's past that point. What is causing this, or how can we prevent this as parents? What can we do on the onset so that we don't have to get to diagnosis and treatment?
As parents, I think it's important to just kind of watch your kids and watch out for any abnormal signs with food and kind of jump on it pretty quickly. So if you notice that your child is starting to diet or cut out things in an abnormal way, or if your child is starting to lose weight drastically, to quickly get them in to see a medical professional for treatment.
Have they found what is the underlying cause? We all see these magazines and the TVs and all these models, but we're not all affected the same way. So there must be something that is different to these kids who are dieting to a point where they're being diagnosed as anorexia nervosa or even bulimia. maybe is it stress? Is it divorce? Is it something at school that's going on that triggers this?
Yeah, I mean, I think for most people with an eating disorder, it's not something that they necessarily want to happen. The research is showing that eating disorders are highly genetic. It's also showing just kind of how that's how somebody with an eating disorder, that's how their brain is kind of working, that it ends up being a coping mechanism for whatever is going on in their life. So for kids that may have a lot of anxiety, if their brain is routed that way, they might quickly learn that food restriction is helping them to manage that anxiety. Or if a child does have some sort of trauma or something going on in their home, they might find that the eating disorder is, again, another method that they're using to cope with that. And so it's all kind of what's happening in the brain and within the brain chemistry, which is why one person is going to possibly end up with an eating disorder and not another. Another thing is that I typically discourage dieting, even kids that are overweight, because for some kids, they might start on that dieting restricting behavior and their brain is instantly hooked. And then it's really difficult for them to kind of get out of that if they have the predisposition for an eating disorder. What happens a lot of times too with a lot of these kids is they start dieting, they start losing weight, and they get a lot of praise for it. They also realize that it's working for them as a coping mechanism and they're hooked and they don't want to stop. And so that's where it takes bringing in a whole team of professionals to work through that.
Now, we talked a little bit earlier about nutrition. I'm just thinking a lot of these kids aren't even eating healthy. They're eating too much sugar, saturated fat, especially when they get to junior high and high school and they get to choose what they want for lunch. And as parents, we don't know what they're choosing for lunch. It could be a bag of Cheetos and a donut. And so if they're not eating nutritionally, they're not going to be growing. If they're not growing, then would that be somehow considered an eating disorder because they're not growing, even though they're not dieting?
Not quite. It's not necessarily like considered like anorexia nervosa or bulimia nervosa. I mean, there's all kinds of different feeding disorders and things like that that could affect growth, but it doesn't fall under those diagnosable categories. There is a category called eating disorders non-otherwise specified that people may have disordered eating or eating disorder behavior, but not show the typical eating disorder symptoms. Typically, the not growing, though, is going to happen more from not necessarily even the types of foods, but probably just lack of nutrition in general or not enough calories in the diet. What's interesting with kids and teens is that I think if they're eating regularly and they're getting calories, their body is going to continue to do its thing, even if their diet isn't always the best. They typically do get what they need. I know it creates a lot of anxiety as a parent, like thinking, well, what are they doing? What are they eating at school? And so I always go back to, the best thing you can do at home is provide what you want to provide. And at least when they're at home, you know, they're getting their fruits and vegetables and things like that, and kind of just let them do what they're going to do. I think the more we make it a non-issue, I feel that the better they are at making different choices.
Then this is what I'm hearing too from you is that when they're at home, you don't have the junk food, the sugary snack, that at least when they get home, the choices they have are all healthy choices, right?
Right. I mean, I think it's okay to have that stuff too, because I think it's important to let them have exposure to them, but also just in the education of everything in moderation. So again, it goes back to the idea of balance. So let's say you've got cookies in the cupboard, you also have lots of cut up fresh fruits and vegetables as well, and teach them to then make those choices for themselves of what feels best for their body. And it's interesting when you start to do that, you'll notice that they may come home and choose a cookie, but then they might also want some fruits and vegetables as well.
Yeah, I've noticed that with my kids. I'm very into nutrition and what goes in the body and how much. We'll have the chocolate, the dark chocolate, or we'll have the cookie. And because I think I don't talk about weight and I always have fresh fruit and that's what we cut, that you're right, they will choose the fruits and the vegetable snacks and the more healthy snack as opposed to the cookies. I mean, they might take a bite of a cookie or half a cookie or maybe one, but they're not like other kids who will that I've seen will devour whatever's in front of them. Their body almost is like, nope, we just want a little bit. Now let's get back to the fruits that we really want.
Exactly. I've noticed that when kids have exposure to things and it's just there and it's a non-issue, that they don't want it as much. I think because of society and we're hearing all these bad things about sugar. And I think that what happens is there's that desire to want to restrict it completely. And I've noticed, especially with teenagers, that if you, or even young kids, that if you constantly say, you can't have it, you can't have it, you can't have it, what is the first thing they're going to want to do once they get away from you is to eat the entire package of cookies. So if you have cookies at home and you just incorporate them once in a while and make it a non-issue, then it's not a big deal. They're not going to want to sit and eat the whole package of cookies.
Yeah, that makes total sense to me. Let's say you're a parent and now you find out that your child has an eating disorder. They've been diagnosed with it. What next? What can we do?
Get help. An eating disorder is, I feel, something that you can't solve alone. I think with parents, trying to solve it at home can sometimes only create a power struggle and make the issue worse. So I think getting them to a medical doctor for a medical assessment and then looking up treatment professionals that work in the field of eating disorders, I think it's really important to get in to a therapist and then also a registered dietitian. But I think using outside individuals to help with the problem is one of the most important things.
Okay, so you're saying don't try to fix this as a parent.
Right. Let's say you have a kid that's underweight and you want to get them to gain weight. So you want to push and try to feed them, especially adolescents. They are going to rebel and not do it. I've noticed that adolescents are more receptive with an outside individuals in that process than parents at home. And then it allows the parents at home just to be there for the emotional support and work with them that way.
Okay. Well, and it makes sense. I mean, I know as a parent, and probably most parents, we don't know anything about eating disorder. And I know even with the technology age, a lot of parents try to learn a lot of things through the internet, but this is something that a professional, I agree with you, needs to be involved.
And a lot of times there can be resentment in the recovery process. So I think it's better to let them be angry with the professionals rather than, I mean, it works better that way.
Yeah, then you're not the one. I mean, the child may have anger or resentment, like you said, to the parents, and they're not going to listen to the parents tell them what to do anyways. They're going to do the exact opposite.
Right. And the disease can take an emotional toll on everybody around. And so it's really important to have that outside outlet to be able to process with as well, because it can be very emotional.
Are there any resources that's out there that you feel is correct that we could go as parents to look at?
Actually, it's the Eating Disorder Resource Catalog, and you can find it like on edcatalog.com, and it has just a lot of books and things like that. And there's a lot of really neat stuff for parents on how to teach your child to love their bodies and stuff like that in that catalog as well. Also, the NEDA website, the National Eating Disorder Association website, is a good one.
One last question before we go, because we are running out of time. What is the biggest thing that people think they know about the eating disorder that is not true?
You know, something that's happening within the brain. And so it's not just as easily solved as go eat a hamburger. I've heard people say, like, I just don't understand why someone just can't eat. It's not that easy.
Okay, that's great. That's great to know, because this is a chemical thing, is what you're saying, as well as an emotional and maybe even other issues that are combining that creates the eating disorder.
Right. And so the only way to recover is to work with a therapist and to get the nutrition correct. If somebody's really underweight too, there's a lot that goes on in the refeeding process. So it needs to be done in an appropriate way.
Yeah, in a controlled environment. Again, Michelle's contact information, and she's here in the South Bay area of Los Angeles, is 310-378-3360. And her email address is nutritionbymonarino, spelled MANARINO@yahoo.com. And her website is eatingdisorder.com. And all of this will be in the show notes. So you can just click on the link and contact her whenever you have the need. Well, thank you, Michelle, for being on the show. And this was very informative. And I really appreciate you sharing your expertise to the parents.
You're welcome. I enjoyed it.
Okay, until next time, and have a wonderful week, everyone.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Go to parentpumpradio.com and click on the pink box on the top of our homepage to listen to our new and archived shows, which are featured on missionswithanSradio.org. To be instantly notified of new episodes, subscribe to our RSS feed. The RSS feed button is located at the top of the page where all our shows are featured on missionsradio.org. And after listening to the show, go to parentpumpradio.com or our Facebook page to leave your comments, questions, and topic suggestions. And while you're at our website, sign up to receive a free gift. Until next time, have a wonderful week.